now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. In the second hour, I will interview Matt. It's an interview with an individual who's had reptilian encounters, but was also trained in the run-up to Hurricane Katrina and its dreadful aftermath. He was trained by reptilians in a shopping mall after hours in Louisiana. So the second part of this interview is very interesting, and I wanted to set the stage and talk a little bit in this first segment about some of the training the reptilians subject people to. I've talked often in the past about the behavioral manipulation, the astral dreamscape manipulation, the sexual manipulation. I've talked a little bit about the physical training that reptilians in particular, and when I use the term reptilians, it's a generic term because, as you'll hear as I go on, there are different types of reptilians, and certain reptilians train people for certain things, certain tasks. Now, to provide a little backdrop for part two, it must be understood that people have described underground tunnel systems beneath shopping malls. Actually, they're quite common. There are people who work with certain stores, the management of shopping malls, the operations office of shopping malls, the security guards of shopping malls, and some of them will tell you, I have seen tunnel systems, what amounts to large, like an installation underground. And these people don't have access to all of the sections of these tunnel systems beneath the malls. They may see a very large door that doesn't have any handles, big enough to drive a truck through, but there's no way for the door to be opened, and the person doesn't have access anyway. They don't know anyone who has access to this big door, and sometimes they're told not even to ask about the different parts of the underground tunnel systems beneath malls. Alan Bruce Walton, he talked about Crossroads Mall in Salt Lake City and how people after hours, the cleaning staff, maintenance, security, etc., would sometimes encounter reptilians. And apparently when the mall, the Crossroads Mall in Salt Lake City, was torn down, the underground tunnel systems, the reptilian tunnel systems, still existed. And apparently people were still, you know, the people that were foolish enough to go out and go down into the tunnel systems, the stories go that some of them never returned. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. I've heard of similar stories in the Superstition Mountains outside of Phoenix, Arizona. So keep that point in mind. Shopping malls, underground tunnel systems, they go hand in hand. And there are many underground tunnel systems beneath many malls. Okay, so just want to make that point. Sometimes also what certain ET groups will do is they will simulate the appearance of a mall. You could be inside of what may be a very large craft, an underground installation, an off-world installation, whatever the case may be, but for whatever reason, maybe it's, you know, familiarity that we have with shopping malls, at least in the Western world, they make some of the craft or some of the installations, the interior, look like very large multi-story malls. And you'll be walking along what appears to be the main floor, and you'll look up and you'll just see these levels above you on all sides, both sides. And you look way down to the other end, and it just seems like you're in a big mall. And they'll even simulate the appearance of the different stores and boutiques and whatnot. That happens as well. Not only that, in our physical 3D world, reptilians will, and other aliens will, take people and abduct people, etc., etc. Sometimes certain ET groups will simulate, will make their installation, their base, their inside of their big craft look like shopping malls to fool us. So we wake up in the morning, we just think we are, you know, walking around at a big mall or something, and never realizing that we had been abducted. My labs and abductees, not just abductees, but my labs have described being in malls, what appear to be malls. I've had experiences where I'd been in what looked to me like a food court of a mall, and I was there with other people, presumably other people like me, I'm guessing. You know, just like any food mall you've been to in a shopping mall, you look around and, you know, there's one restaurant there, there's another restaurant here, and then there's tables there and places to throw away your garbage and recycling places, et cetera, et cetera. It looks like a shop, rather a food court, right? And I've been in places that were simulated, at least, if not actual food courts in shopping malls. They were made to look that way, but I feel in at least one of my experiences, I was in a food court. And the reptilians will physically train people. It's not just the behavioral conditioning, astral dreamscape conditioning, and neurological, psychological conditioning, etc., that I talk about. But sometimes certain groups will train people in the physical 3D to do certain things. Pam Hamilton was abducted by several different groups of ETs, and her main reptilian abductor was a very large male, but another reptilian group, and I've heard about these guys, and females too, I'm presuming, they would abduct her, and these particular reptilians were smaller. They were smaller, and they appeared to her and others I've spoken to, they seem to be more serpent-like. They seem to be more snake-like. They're humanoid, but their head, their facial structure, isn't perceived so much as being lizard-like, but more serpent-like, snake-like. And they've been called the snake people, some of these smaller reptilians. And they would abduct Pam Hamilton, take her on board what, I'm trying to remember here what she told me so many years ago, but I think that it was a triangular-shaped craft, and they would sit her at the control panel, sit her at the console, the navigation console, and they would teach her how to fly this thing. And when Pam had difficulties, when she couldn't catch on, she said they would hiss at her. Okay, I'm trying to fly this thing, you know. Back off, right? She said that this particular reptilian group that was small, little snake-like guys that are humanoid, she said they're particularly nasty, particularly spiteful, and can be quite intimidating, quite violent when they needed to. And I've heard other stories of these snake beings. I'm not assuming that they're all the same. I'm just saying that there have been accounts of these small snake humanoid beings. And it's another person I knew quite well. She was taken to an underground base by these snake beings, just to digress a little bit, snake humanoids. And she saw a human mounted on a wall. Okay, think of taxidermists taking the body of an animal that was hunted as a trophy, which is disgusting if you ask me, and shameful. But anyhow, what a lot of these hunters do is that they kill these beautiful animals, and then they have a taxidermist, you know, work on it, and then they mount this thing on their wall, right? It's kind of macabre if you ask me. But anyhow, in this underground base, these smaller reptilian beings that were kind of snake-like as far as their head was concerned, they showed this woman a human that was like stuffed, for lack of a better term, and mounted on a wall. And this woman I know said, oh, you know, kind of freaked out and goes, what the hell, right? And then the reptilian said to her, this is what you do to animals, right? And she really didn't have much to say about that. And I think the exact words were something to the effect of, this is what you humans do to other animals. So don't act so shocked or something like that, or offended. And while I'm on the subject of that particular smallish serpent-like group of reptilian humanoids, I knew another gal who was a member of, what was it, Office of Emergency Management. Can't remember the exact name of this state agency in California. And you look at her, she was a full-on reptilian hybrid. She attended one of the alien abduction support group meetings of Evie Lorgan and I back in the day. And another member of our support group who has that second sight, can see the entities overshadowing, you know, the host human. She later showed me a sketch of the entity that was overshadowing this particular gal who worked with emergency management. And it looked like a large Gila monster with its tongue sticking out was the entity that had taken her up as a host. And, you know, this gal had a lot of, like so many, not all, but like many full-on Draco reptilian human hybrids. They can be quite self-indulgent, quite grandiose, and quite egotistical. It kind of comes with the territory. And she was telling me, this woman that had this Gila monster entity overshadowing her, she told me that the group of small serpent-like reptilian beings that work with her, she called the leader of this particular group the captain, and the captain would likewise teach her how to fly craft and would take her to places and take her out into space and all this other stuff. So I've heard about this small-ish serpent-like group of reptilians before, and if any of you out there listening have had encounters with these beings, I'd like to know about it. And just share whatever you're comfortable with. Reptilians will train people to fly craft. They will also train people to operate as soldiers, operators, combat operatives. I've known of cases where a female MILAB and abductee, she since passed away, she was being trained in, she lived in a southern state in the U.S. She was being trained by what she first thought was a human military trainer. She called Mike. And this guy was a soldier, apparently, and would be teaching her combat skills. In fact, they taught her anti-terrorist and hostage rescue and storming airliners to take them down, right? I mean, think of a hijacked airliner on the ground. Rescue team comes in, kills the tangos, rescues the hostages, right? Or tries to, anyway. Well, in some of the training she went through from this Mike guy, that's what she did. She stormed this, you know, along with a team, and sometimes individually, she would gain access into this large airliner. And for many years, the various airlines would provide counter-terrorist hostage teams planes to practice their craft on, right? I mean, fully, you know, full planes. These weren't just mock-ups. These just weren't, you know, simulations. These weren't, you know, put together by, you know, with plywood or, you know, that kind of thing. I'm talking about proper planes, not fueled up, and maybe not even airworthy, but planes nonetheless. Special Forces, hostage rescue units, Delta Force, and Special Air Service, etc., would train relentlessly on these planes, various types of planes, right? Because different airliners have different configurations, different access points, right? Et cetera, et cetera. So they would train religiously on all these different types of planes, as well as trains, as well as buses, ocean-going vessels, et cetera. Because hostage situations have happened on, a variety of transport vehicles. So this gal was being trained to take down hijacked airliners. It emerged that this Mike Trainer guy wasn't just a military guy. He was a shapeshifter because over time, during the course of her training, she would see this Mike guy shapeshift into a full-on reptilian. And this reminds me, too, I just spoke of Pam Hamilton and how that group of smaller reptilians, smaller in size, slighter of build, and they would, get angry at her if she didn't know how to fly, or she wasn't learning fast enough to fly their craft. She was also put through training, military-style training, by reptilians. She was firing weapons, and not just terrestrial earth weapons, too. She'd be firing kind of advanced directed energy weapons, and I've heard this before as well. The reptilians will train people to fly craft. They will train people to conduct military type operations, taking down airliners that have been hijacked that are on the ground, military skills, etc., etc. So keep all that in mind as you listen to this interview with Matt, because he's going to talk about, some of the stuff that he had experienced. Because the reptilians would take him into a mall at night and put him through his paces as far as crowd control, as far as riot control, etc., etc. Some of you have heard my interview with Sashita. Sashita is a very interesting gal, and she's gone through a lot of training herself. In fact, they utilize her in ops, the reptilians do, or a faction of them. They send her into the future to do certain things, wet work, assassinations, and sometimes she'd kill humans, sometimes she'd kill reptilians. And as a young girl, she didn't tell the story, but I don't think she'll mind if I tell you the story, but she scared the hell out of some little girls because of her ability to shapeshift. And as a matter of fact, I think she talked about her ability to shapeshift in the interview, or two interviews she did with us. So I'm not spilling any big secret, but I don't think she told the story. And what happened was she was getting bullied by these young girls in school, and I think it was some kind of a like a boarding school or something, because they seemed to live at the place. One of these girls that were bullying her, this clique of girls, had stolen one of Sashita's belongings. And when she Sashita went back to the dorm and found out that her belonging had been stolen, she knew immediately it was these girls, because they weren't even trying to hide the fact, they were laughing at her. So what happened was Sashita underwent a shapeshift, and something happened with her eyes, something happened with her face, and the girls that had been mocking her and bullying her and all that, and who had stolen her belongings, they screamed and they all fled in terror and they ran away, right? Because Sashita was so pissed off, pardon my Anunnaki, that engendered this shapeshift in her. And the shapeshifting, and she talked a bit also in the interviews with me about the process of how they made her like kind of more reptilian. And there was, she already had that reptilian genetic overlay to begin with. And what they did was they just enhanced her with their technology, with their medical practices, etc., etc. They just kept modifying her until she became more and more reptilian. And I've known of cases, other cases, where women, and they do this to males too. I mean, just look at all these serial murders and all these other assorted perps. But in the example I'm using, it was a gal I know, and it seemed to me they were turning this gal reptilian from the inside out, because she was one of those types that was having almost nightly experiences and marks all over her body, and her personality was starting to change too, because when she'd get mad at her partner or husband, she would start to hiss at him, you know, and she'd had a lot of experiences too, reptilian experiences. So it's an example of how not only were they, you know, doing psychological, neurological, emotional, behavioral manipulation upon her, but they were changing her inside and out from the frequent medical procedures they were doing to her, making her essentially more and more reptilian. So Sashita's story is not even unusual in that regard, where they will take some, and I believe this is what they do with the so-called reptilian bloodline elite as well. They just, you know, when they need to do an upgrade on them or maintenance, if you will, they'll just, you know, the reptilians and or reptilian-hosted, malignly influenced, human-appearing doctors will go to town on one of these royals and people like them or hybrid reptiles like them and adjust them, etc., etc.
I'm one of those connect-the-dots kind of guys. I like to see how what's going on in the ET realm, in the underground realm, in the weird science, deep black realm, how it coalesces, how it merges, how it interfaces with the surface world, because it's interconnected, it's interlinked. That's the problem so many of these surface level truthers have. They can only see things from the surface level. Oh, the banks, oh, the fiat currency, oh, the false flags, oh, you know, they'll maybe go so far as to admit that some of the so-called elite royals, or not even royals, but just elite types, are predators, pedophiles, ritual murderers, etc., but they don't know why they're like that. I guess they just think they just woke up and, you know, decided to be like that, when they don't realize that there's a genetic spiritual underpinning. They don't realize that there's a hybridization process at work. And that's why they'll never figure it out. That's why they're always going to be just resonating at a frequency of fear and impotent rage and hopelessness. And moving forward, people like that they're going to be more of a hindrance than anything. I'm not going to want really people around me that are just surface level types, because when things get really wonky, when things get really strange and really scary, and doorways and portals are opening up left, right, and center, I don't want to be around people like that, because they're just going to be freaking out and they're going to be useless and they'll just be baggage I'll have to haul around. Ain't going to happen. I'm only going to want to be around spiritual warriors. Been there, done that. BDDT. But I do like to have an analysis of what's going on in the surface world and see how it meshes with what's going on behind the scenes, extraterrestrial, interdimensional, weird science, deep black military stuff. Years ago, when I was in San Diego, and this is the way higher self, oversoul, spirit works, call it what you will, but I met a gal who was with the customs and border control. Fluent Spanish speaker, a lady in her late 40s, really sharp, really switched on. Can't even remember how we met, but she invited me to her house and we had a really good conversation. And it turns out, and she just felt moved to start talking about these things with me. And this is in the days of the Clinton administration, right? The Clintons, Bill Clinton. Because things really accelerated during that time period. Think of Waco, think of Oklahoma City. The Democrats have always been the more Bolshevik, socialist communist wing of the two-party duopoly. You know, the Republicans they were good at shaming people domestically, and sure, they did their skullduggery, black ops, and assassinations when necessary, but usually, you know, their forte was, you know, overseas kind of foreign policy shenanigans, whereas the Democrats did both. The Democrats were always getting involved in wars. Just look at how the drone and the Joint Special Operations Command, CIA Special Activities Division, operational tempo, went through the roof under Obama, who's supposed to be the Nobel Prize winner, right? But also, from a domestic standpoint, they did so much social engineering, so much repression, so much everything under Bill Clinton, his two terms, and then under Obama. And when I met this gal who worked with Customs and Border Control, Border Patrol, she told me some interesting things. She said that they were starting to receive training. These feds would come in from D.C. and elsewhere, and they would start to teach them crowd control. They would start to increase the amount of weapons training, riot sticks, batons, working in teams, a whole phalanx of them, you know, training to push back rioters, training to, you know, subdue crowds, and also firearms training and emphasis and increase in firearms training. Of course, nowadays, it's all these federal agencies are stocking up on their guns and ammo and loading up on the hollow points, social services, loading up. It's like, what are they getting ready for, like insurrection or something, right? But, or just mass chaos. But this gal was telling me, Customs Border Patrol, really sharp, switched on gal, that the emphasis, and this was during the Clinton years, before 9/11, before the neocons were passed the baton, that the emphasis had shifted to riot control, to subduing crowds of people. And during that time frame, it must be remembered, when Clinton was in office, they did the Partnership for Peace, Bridges to America. So overnight, all these countries that had formerly been part of the Eastern Bloc, so-called Warsaw Pact, suddenly they were just merged with NATO. So overnight, there was cross-training with military and law enforcement units from the Czech Republic, from the Baltic states, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, from just a variety of countries, Poland, etc., etc. Now, when I worked in civil service for Commander Naval Air Force's U.S. Pacific Fleet, COMNAV AIRPAC, we used to get, and those of you that, you know, have worked in civil service, been contractors, been ex-military, you know what I'm talking about. We used to get either in hard copy delivered to us or on computer this newspaper clipping service of all defense, so-called defense military related stuff called the Early Bird. And I used to read the Early Bird every chance I got because there was so much open source, open publication, unclassified, New World Order related information in it that, you know, frankly went over the heads of many people. It never occurred to them that they're reading stuff about the New World Order because, well, their consciousness just wasn't there yet, right? And I remember flipping through the pages of the Early Bird. We used to get these just about every day. And there were, you know, newspaper clippings from newspapers in Maryland, open source, major newspapers in Maryland and elsewhere, talking about how the National Guard units of certain states, Maryland was one of them, I remember that distinctly, were training with their counterparts from the Baltic republics, Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, and they were training in, get this, crowd control, quelling riots, and in particular, food riots, go figure. And so I'm thinking, well, what does this mean? There's going to be like a breakdown in basic services. For whatever reason, there's going to be no food on the shelves. And right, mass panic, Mad Max situation. And around that time frame, I went to this large conference. Every year there was a large conference at the San Diego Convention Center. Same place where they have Comic-Con. I wish all the years I'd lived in San Diego, I wish I'd went to the Comic-Con at least once. Never did. My bad. Anyway, at the San Diego Convention Center, they would have the yearly AFCEA conference. Don't know if they have it now. They had it back then. Armed Forces Communications Electronics Association. And all the major contractors would have their booths set up. Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, you name it, they would be there. Plus, a lot of exhibits and stands would be set up by the various military commands, military agencies, particularly in the intelligence community, security, communications. And because I was in the communications business, I would go there. The commander that I worked for, you know, would send me there along with my colleagues from communications. And I looked at the program, and for many years I kept this program, right? And then due to my many migrations, I lost it over the years. The program for the whole conference was Operations Other Than War. And that was a buzzword back in the old days for UN peacekeeping, right? And on the cover was a cartoon drawing of a guy wearing a UN helmet carrying a little baby, like rescuing it. So the emphasis even then was the United Nations. And remember, here's the context, here's the background. Bridges to America, Partnership for Peace, overnight something like 16 former Eastern Bloc countries, and extending all the way into Central Asia too. You know, countries like Uzbekistan that had nothing to do with the Warsaw Pact or NATO, but were, you know, caught up in the melee just the same over the years. They became merged with NATO, the NATO scheme of things. So I'm looking at this program, and then there's this unclassified panel discussion, and it was about operations other than war. Also, and there was also discussions about what was known as MOOTWA, military operations in urban terrain. I go, well, I'm going to that exhibition, right? So I go there, and there's a panel of retired and active duty admirals and generals and whatnot from the various armed forces. And they're talking about, basically, merging U.S. armed forces and National Guard with United Nations troops, with NATO troops. And it's funny because the knuckleheads will say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory, that'll never happen, blah, 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 quack, quack, quack. Here it is, basically a public forum. Anyone who has a need to be there or is sent there can see that this is what they're talking about, right? Of course, I had to be the fly in the ointment because they asked for questions from the audience, right? And so I took my turn. I don't know if I ever told the story, but I was sitting there in the audience, and there was a guy to my left, older guy, showed me his card, Naval Intelligence, tried to big shot me, right? Didn't think nothing of it, because, you know, people don't get much mileage out of me when they try to big shot me. And so they had the microphone set up in the aisle, and people come up and ask these questions, usually innocuous, vapid questions. Then it was my turn. You have to understand, this is probably the largest exhibition hall in that whole San Diego Convention Center, probably where they have the Comic-Con, right? So I rock up to the microphone and I say, Presidential Decision Directive 25 states in so many words that foreign commanders, military commanders, can take command of U.S. forces in the event of a national emergency or when operational circumstances so dictate. And I'm asking you, the panel, I want you to give your thoughts about Presidential Decision Directive 25 as well as PPD 25, if memory serves. It's either PPD 25 or 125. And I also asked them what they would do if in the future they were given a patently illegal, unconstitutional order such as confiscating firearms from American citizens. Well, you could have heard a pin drop, right? And so I went back to my seat. And it's funny because the naval intelligence guy next to me, he's slinking as far away from me as he can. It's like he doesn't even want to touch me because I might somehow contaminate him and, you know, get his clearance revoked or something. And, you know, some of the guys in the panel, and these are older senior officers or retired senior officers, and one of them said, well, you know, part of the problem with PDD-25 is a lot of it is still classified. We don't know what the details are. We don't know what it exactly means, what the chain of command will be if, you know, indeed foreign military commanders will be given control of U.S. troops, U.S. National Guard in the event of a national emergency or whatever operational circumstances thus dictate, whether domestically or whether abroad, right? And then, you know, as far as the firearms issue was concerned, some of them tried to dodge that subject. And one of them said, well, you know, he tried to imply that he wouldn't follow an illegal order, unconstitutional order, but he also hedged by saying, there will be no Nuremberg trials here, right? Which I've always thought the Nuremberg trials were a kangaroo court and a farce anyway, right? So many of those German prisoners of war were tortured in order to make them confess. Look that up. Pliers applied to their testicles. They would have been admitting to have crucified Jesus Christ if they were told to. So anyway, one of these high-ranking mucky-mucks says, well, you know what? Oh, I'm not going to follow an unconstitutional legal order, and there's going to be no Nuremberg trials here, right? Didn't answer my question. Is he going to follow through and order the confiscation of firearms from Americans, and will he order U.S. troops to fire on American citizens? I also asked that, right? This is why you could hear a pin drop in that place. So, anyway, the point of relevance is all that was going on around that time frame during the Clinton administration, Bridges to America, NATO suddenly expands radically eastward with the coming down of the wall and dissolution of the Warsaw Pact. It was around that time frame that the lady I was talking to in customs and the border patrol, they were starting to get trained in crowd control, etc., etc. And you have to also look at it from the context of the bogus war on drugs. Because the bogus war on drugs happened before the bogus war on terror. And now they're all intermingled and have been, actually, from the very start. Because false flags, Gladio, all that had been going on in parallel to all this drug trafficking. And, of course, intelligence, black ops, organized crime, two sides of the same coin, have been involved in narcotics, illegal drug trafficking from the start. But in order to create this police state, they used the war on drugs as an excuse to militarize law enforcement. And I'd spoken to former Navy SEALs that were aware of this, and it became fairly common knowledge. U.S. Marine Corps, Army Rangers, Delta Force, etc. had been training local law enforcement, sheriff's departments, police departments, SWAT teams, training SWAT teams, training them in dynamic entry, etc., etc. So that dynamic was going on. And the bogus war on drugs, it involved what they called at the time multi-jurisdictional task forces. Everything from the Fish and Wildlife Department, National Park Service, paramilitary units even. And, you know, you had that shady area there, you know, were these units, these special units, were they violating posse comitatus, right? Which forbids the Army from acting in a constabulary police role. And this is why during the LA riots, not only was the National Guard called out, but apparently, if memory serves,
they were ready to send in the Marines, and the Marines were, still are, a part of the Naval Service. I guess it was a way to get around the Posse Comitatus Act by sending in the U.S. Marines. And they have urban warrior drills all the time, where the U.S. Marines go around setting up checkpoints, roadblocks, frisking citizens, etc., etc. Urban warrior, they've been doing that for years. I don't know if they're doing it still or they call it by another name. So you have this bogus war on terror. And you have things like, and this is well known within law enforcement intelligence circles. Everything I'm saying is well known and has been out in open published sources. Things like Operation Alliance, where, again, you have this fudge factor, this intermingling, this enmeshment between law enforcement and the military. You have things like EPIC, E-P-I-C, the El Paso Intelligence Center. According to their own website, EPIC offers tactical, operational, and strategic intelligence support to federal, state, local, tribal, and international law enforcement organizations. So, all that was going on. Operation Alliance, this merging of military and law enforcement duties. You were having the training of civilian law enforcement by military units, by the Rangers, by Delta Force, etc., etc. Not many people realize it, but Delta Force was present at Waco. Not just the FBI's HURT unit, hostage rescue team, but Delta Force. And Delta Force and the HURT unit from the FBI have had a symbiotic relationship from the beginning. They share assets. They're, you know, transported around in helos together, etc., etc. And that's been going on for a long time. Alex Jones, for many years, has reported on site sometimes from these places where, you know, Delta Force and other military units, the Night Stalkers, the 1st Special Operations Aviation Regiment used to be until the Mandela Effect kicked in, and now it's called the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, and they're based at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. They fly around in the Black Hawks and the Little Birds, and their job is transporting Special Operations units, DEVGRU, a.k.a. SEAL Team 6, Delta Force, the FBI HURT unit, etc., etc. Well, the FBI HURT unit and Delta Force were at Waco, and also observers from the British Special Air Service were at Waco too, right? So foreign troops were there, you know, watching that whole, you know, fiasco murder go down. And it was also around that time in the 1990s that a lot of people in the Special Forces community, even members of SOFD, Special Operations Forces Delta, a.k.a. Delta Force, a lot of them began to see the writing on the wall. A lot of them began to see that a lot of this was starting to gear up towards internal security. And a lot of the senior officers, a lot of the longtime senior non-coms began retiring and resigning their commissions. Resigning their commissions in the case of the officers, in the case of the senior NCOs who'd put their 20 in, a lot of them were getting out because they could see where it was headed. And many of them pointed out that just the kind of recruiting they were doing, Delta Force began recruiting amongst the U.S. Marines a lot. They had recruited amongst the Rangers from the beginning, the creation of Delta Force. And Delta Force was modeled after the British Special Air Service. Delta Force started to recruit U.S. Marines. And it begs the question, what was all that training for? All the emphasis towards internal security, the emphasis towards the enmeshment and the intermingling of state, local, federal law enforcement, even down to the National Park Service and Fish and Wildlife and, you know, all these other agencies, right? They're all merging these multi-jurisdictional task forces along with the military. Where was it all headed, right? And then you start having all this riot control training and Maryland National Guard training and food riots. And then you began to see thousands upon thousands of U.S. law enforcement
state, local, and federal, being trained in Israel, being trained by Israelis, and then increasingly the border security and the transportation security was being taken over by Israeli security firms. It's funny when you hear people say, "Oh yes, you know, in order to protect our country, Trump needs to build that wall all along the southern border." And, well, it's not going to stop the CIA protected Sinaloa and Zeta drug cartels from bringing in all the drugs. That's not going to happen. So why would this wall even go up? Who's it keeping out? Or maybe the question should be, who's it meant to keep in, right? And you have all these people screaming. Well, because I talked about the Kalergi-Codenhove agenda of flooding all these largely Caucasian countries with foreigners, immigrants, brown-skinned, black immigrants. That's part of the agenda. And, you know, putting a wall up is not going to stop that. I think of that Pink Floyd song, "Hey You," whenever I hear somebody talking about, "Oh, we need to put a wall up on the border," you know. It makes me laugh. "But it was only fantasy. The wall was too high, as you can see. No matter how he tried, he could not break free. And the worms ate into his brain." Yeah, and I think that's what's going on with a lot of people who think that way. "Oh, we'll just put a wall up and that'll solve the immigration problem," right? Another aspect of the immigration problem that's only now starting to dawn on people is that a lot of these immigrants are vectors for diseases. And you're looking now at all these outbreaks in Canada and all these outbreaks in Madagascar. All this stuff is going on. People coming down with all kinds of infectious diseases. Oh, but you know what? They're not checking out the immigrants. My guess is, I think they're purposely infecting some of these immigrants and turning them loose, especially in Europe and places, these raping immigrants, right? Because not only do they infect one another, if some of these immigrants are injected with a pathogen, a contagious pathogen, not only do they infect all the others that they're being shipped around with, but, you know, the women and young children that they rape are going to be infected. So that's going to start infecting the host population, right? So, and it's not just the pathogens and infectious diseases that some of these immigrants may be infected with. It's the diseases they are naturally carrying along anyway. A lot of these people, I mean, they come from third world hell holes where you don't have sanitation, you don't have hygiene. Some of these immigrants, you know, I'll be politically incorrect here, I don't give a rat's ass. They wouldn't know what personal hygiene was if it fell out of the sky and landed on their heads. And also, in a lot of these African countries, what happens? The WHO show up, World Health Organization, with the relief workers with all their hypodermic needles. And they inject all these natives, and then pretty soon they start shipping them into Europe, right? So all that is going on. What happens when you start having all these infectious outbreaks? All these people start demanding quarantines. They start demanding mass vaccinations. And then now you start to get an idea of, like, maybe that's perhaps one of the reasons for all this crowd control training, food riot training, etc., etc. And you don't have to agree with me with this, still a free will zone, last I checked. But I do feel that Planet X, the Red Dwarf, are real. I've seen it. I've talked about this. And it's starting to cause all kinds of earth changes, volcanic, seismic activity, water rising up in certain places around the world, in coastal areas. We're starting to see that take place. So if the powers that be know there's going to be sometime down the track huge mega earth changes, they're going to get ready. Now the elite, so-called, the ones who have the means, the power, the influence, they're either going to hide out in their underground luxurious bases, or they're going to head off world if they have that capability, if they have that clearance, if they have that influence and power. Okay, so I wanted to bring all this stuff up within the context of
what I talked about at the outset, the merging of the surface world, the merging of the surface black ops, false flags, bogus war on terror, bogus war on drugs, militarization of law enforcement, and this whole concept of reptilians training humans, which I was talking about earlier. It's where the twain meets. A lot of these people on the surface, all these surface-level intelligence and security agencies, they don't have a clue as to what's really going on at the deepest, darkest levels. Now, some people do. Some of these, like, Secret Service guys and people that have worked in underground bases and that kind of thing, they have an idea. And also people that have kept track of, you know, the heinous, evil things some of these elite hybridized reptilian Draco people do, right? Keep all that stuff in mind. Okay, you've reached the end of the first segment of this, what's going to be an interview. You're going to be listening to Matt R, R as in Romeo, talking about his experiences being trained by reptilians in crowd control, in handling riots, etc., etc. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour with our interview with Matt.